Couldn't hear you, I think.
There it is, Kirk Euler. Were you just talking to me there?
Yeah, I was. I was just seeing if you could hear me.
I can hear you. You're in my studio. Thanks for joining me.
Hello?
How to be Tom Shalhoub. Starring Tom Shalhoub. You know, not everybody wants to be Tom Shalhoub. But for those people who do, I guess this podcast is for them. I mean, you gotta model yourself after someone, right? Might as well be me, Tom Shalhoub. I don't know when it was the last time we talked. Was it a couple, 2 years ago?
It was. Yeah, it was a couple years ago. It was right during the heart of things. We were still locked down California statewide. And I think at that time, we hadn't declared an end to our local emergency yet in Placer County. I think it was after you and I talked that I got the board to declare an end to the local state of emergency. So I don't think we had done that yet.
So the what I'm doing now is I've restarted this podcast. I wanted to go back and talk to some of the people I was talking to before when I was podcasting, and it was all about COVID because this was early on in the shutdowns. You were one of the guys. I kind of I found you probably just on YouTube or something like that. It was like Kirk Euler, Placer County Super. Were you supervisor?
I was, yes.
And yeah. What did they do? Did they kick you out? I mean, what happened? Did somebody like you got voted out, right?
I did, but you know what? That actually happened before COVID hit. So California got moved up. Our primary was the first week in March. To be a part of the Super Tuesday because, you know, the Democrats wanted to be a part of making the decision on the nominee.
Yeah.
And we had just a huge Democrat turnout. I was public enemy number one on our board of supervisors for the Democrats. And even though the person running against me was actually a registered Republican as well, since her name wasn't Kirk Euler, was the default choice. I actually lost, and then all the COVID stuff hit, and then I show up on the scene as kind of the champion for opening things back up, and had a number of people come up to me saying, I wish I had that as a do-over.
Yeah, it is interesting because something in my head, I thought they must have voted him out because of his COVID policy.
The but really, other way around, that's right.
Yeah.
The other way around. I think had the vote been a normal June election, which is normally when California votes, had it been a normal June election, I think I'd have done okay.
Yeah. So a couple things on the COVID. Basically, I would say there's two sections to this conversation I want to have. First of all, is the COVID conversation, and sure. Second of all, is the California situation. Right. I want to talk about California and your county. The state, things like that. Okay,
sure.
But absolutely. Let's start with the COVID because I want to ask you, and I'm asking some other people because I had a guy, Mark Changizi. He was one of the other guys I talked to that I found on YouTube back when the pandemic started. And the people that I latched on to, what was it, do you think, about the people who early on saw what was happening? They saw it as a, and I call it a hoax now. When you used to say hoax, they'd say, oh, you're one of those crazy people right. Who believes that COVID didn't exist. No, no, no. The whole thing was from the beginning, I knew it was going bad. The first week, and there were other guys like Changizi and like yourself. What was it? And I don't want this to be a session of like, oh, we were so much smarter than everyone. But, there was a certain type of person who did not fall for what was going on.
Yes.
And you were one of them. Why do you think that was?
Because when asking questions that would otherwise not elicit a visceral response, elicits a visceral response, you know there's more to it than just the quote-unquote public safety side of it. Mm-hmm. There's something else at play here. If you say, now, hold on, I'm charged with public policy, but public policy should be based on data, and people are coming at you screaming that the data doesn't matter, just shut everything down, that's kind of a, no, there's something not right here. Let's dig a little deeper. And of course, the more I was told to shut up, the deeper I dug.
Yeah.
And that's when I started putting together the comparisons back in May, June of 2000 of, okay, let's take these Bay Area counties that all locked down and let's compare them to these counties that didn't. How are we doing?
Yeah. You remember those doctors, the two guys that did that press conference early on, and they kind of drummed out of town. And I haven't done a follow-up on those guys. I never actually talked to those guys, but I remember when that press conference was happening and a bunch of local news places and Fox News, I think, went to that video and people were fascinated by it. And it really blew up on YouTube. Of course, they took their YouTube away and those two doctors, they became, you know, doctoris non grata after that. And I don't know whatever happened to those guys, but they were, I mean, they're a couple of my COVID heroes because they were doing what you did and they went viral. And I think I'm going to do a follow-up and find out where they went, but you know, they were definitely shunned and shamed.
Yeah.
And now, you just alluded to it when we started. Did people act like you were a kook? Did people call you a crazy conspiracy theorist? And now are they calling you back and saying, you know what, Kirk, you were right all along. Have you been getting that?
The only thing that where I really, in some people's minds, where I really quote unquote crossed the line was a video that I did where I equated masks to the AIDS ribbons of the 80s. And where if you didn't wear a mask, it meant you didn't care. Regardless of whether the mask had an impact, the mask was just a visual sign that you cared. Kind of like, why aren't you wearing your AIDS ribbon? Yeah. Do you not care? Well, is me wearing an AIDS ribbon going to cure anybody with AIDS? Is it going to do it? No, but it shows you care. Okay, but what's that going to do? And so that was the only thing that I did that I actually got real blowback from people who thought that was over the line. And then, of course, all the studies come out showing masks didn't do a damn thing. So, yeah.
Well, it's funny, too, because now I think do you remember the Seinfeld episode where they didn't want to wear the AIDS ribbon? Yeah, hilarious episode. And they dealt with that very that kind of shaming. And if you look back at that episode, that's exactly what happened with masks. Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect comparison. So the idea that you'd get in trouble for that one, that's quite amazing. I think the early on, I would say that I thought masks were inhuman. I didn't care if they worked. So people would get mad at me when I would say, I don't care. I don't care if they work. They're inhuman. It's inhuman to cover the face. I'm not going to do it. And so that would get people very angry. But I think that there is, I think, again, people are waking up to that. And so the people who gave you blowback, they didn't come back to you and say, maybe we were wrong about that.
No, where I did actually get some quote unquote apologies was that I was emphatic in taking a position, asking questions, and people were saying it's too soon, just go with it, all that kind of stuff. And so that's the one area where people said you were right to be taking the hard line and asking the questions you were asking at a time when people were telling you don't ask questions, just do it, especially given the fact that I got a direct threat in writing from the California Director of Public Health to me saying, because of my actions, I was jeopardizing $40 million that was supposed to be coming to our county. Mm-hmm. You know, his in writing to me in a letter on his letterhead said, you know, well, since you're asking these questions, I guess you think your county doesn't need these funds.
It's really amazing.
That extortion? What the hell is that?
Yeah. Well, it did happen. And you know, the people who, it became so macabre, the people who were waiting for transplants, and many people did die waiting for their organs, and they wouldn't let them because they didn't get a vaccine, which they knew. These people were on a transplant list. They had their organs failing, and they said, no, I don't want to get an experimental shot while my organs are failing. And then, of course, you know, they died on the waiting list.
Yeah.
So so let's talk about California now. I remember one of the videos you did before, it was it Prop 15, was it called?
Which
Prop 15? It was the proposition that it was about property taxes on businesses, essentially.
Oh,
right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. 215.
Okay.
So, it was in the 200s. I'm sorry. Now I remember which one. Yeah, where they were basically going to take them out of Prop 13 exemption.
Yeah, and you said this was this would cause a death spiral in California, because they were basically going to make up whatever shortfall they thought they had for schools. And schools was, I guess, the major thing. They needed to plug the shortfall, and they were going to tax businesses at a higher rate, and you said that's going to drive more businesses out of state, and it's going to cause the death spiral, right?
Well, even beyond that, this proposition was so poorly written that even the statewide assessors association of county assessors came out opposed to it, saying, there's no way we could actually do this. We couldn't actually implement what it is you think we should be doing in order to escalate these tax rates. We don't have enough assessors in the public sector. You'd have to take every appraiser out of the private sector, move them to the public sector, and decimate the private sector economy, appraisals, you know, new homes and all the rest, just to fulfill on this damn thing. So, and none of that was taken into consideration. The feasibility of it wasn't taken into consideration. The public sector cost associated with never. So yes, but yeah, you're right. My focus was on that constant, now we're going to increase the cost, which reduces the profitability, which reduces the number of businesses that are actually able to operate at a profit, thereby generating tax revenue, which then subsequently reduces your tax revenue, which subsequently reduces your ability to provide services, which subsequently increases your need to try to generate more tax revenue. And that's what we consider the death spiral, where one just leads the other. Now, you know, we're seeing it, even though that didn't pass, thank God. We're seeing it anyway here in California with a number of businesses that have said, enough, we're done, we're out.
Well, yeah, that was my next question. I that thing didn't pass, but I was going to ask you, I mean, isn't it happening anyway? California, obviously, I don't know a lot of the numbers, but I did look up the school budget. It's over $100 billion for just for schools for California. And I think the per pupil is at levels that's kind of like New York. I know in New York, it's over $20,000 per student, and most private schools can do it for half that amount, I think.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
So California passed a proposition called Prop 98, which guaranteed public education. Essentially, what it breaks down to is basically says public education will get about half of the state funding. Mm-hmm. Regardless of need, regardless of track record, regardless of success, it basically just locked in a funding formula that says that the schools get approximately half of the general fund. So all of a sudden, it became in the interest of the California Teachers Association and those public employees to now have an ever-expanding size of the state government. If they're guaranteed half of it, why would what do you care where it's going to, the other 50% is going to be spent? As long as you know the state spending more on anything means you get more money, regardless of increasing enrollment or declining enrollment, regardless of you're achieving the outcome or you're failing in achieving the outcome. It is just such a wacky system. And I'll tell you, until we get some form of school choice in this state, you're never going to see that reformed.
Yeah. And so what would be the chances of that happening? It seems like in California and in New York, you're never going to get anywhere close to school choice. Well, or is there some kind of movement that I don't know about?
The only hope we have in California, as you alluded to earlier, we do have the initiative process here in California. Mm-hmm. And of course, you get something like that qualified for the ballot requires somewhere in the neighborhood of 600,000 to 800,000 valid signatures, which is an expensive endeavor. To get that many signatures to qualify. And then, of course, running the campaign. The California Teachers Association has essentially limitless funds. The number one lobbying organization in the state of California. They spend, everybody talks about the influence of big pharma and big oil and all the rest. No, it's your public employees unions. Your public employees unions spend more money lobbying than any other organization, CTA, California Teachers Association, being chief among them. So, the amount of money that they have to spend against something like that, it's just tough to overcome.
Yeah. Did COVID disillusion a lot of people, and it moved a lot of people into the idea of homeschooling, obviously. So I think the schools suffered a lot from that. Was there a big movement in California big homeschooling movement?
There was, but I will tell you that the bigger movement was the movement of prime earning years couples that have children out of state.
Yeah,
that was the biggest movement, was actually not just we're taking our kids out of the public school and homeschooling them, we're taking them out and we're taking them to a different location. And so the exodus that you've seen from California has been predominantly middle-class families, and not necessarily all conservative/Republican middle-class families. And what we've really seen in our county, so Placer County, we're part of the Sacramento metropolitan region. We're one of six counties that make up the greater Sacramento area. Our county is about 500,000 people. We're the highest Republican registered county in the state of California prior to COVID, the highest Republican registered county, over 250,000 registered voters. So there's some smaller counties that have a higher percentage, mm-hmm. but of over 250,000, we're the highest. What we saw in our county, very interesting. Significant exodus of those prime earning years families taking their kids and getting out of here, and an influx of Bay Area people who are done with the Bay Area BS or human S on the street, as it were, yeah. out there, moving up here. And we saw our voting registration numbers start to close. So now all of a sudden what was a bright red county is becoming a little purplish in certain areas. Now, when push comes to shove, at least in the last couple of elections, we've still voted overwhelmingly Republican in our county. But the people replacing those that are heading out of state are those that were traditionally Bay Area liberals or Bay Area Democrats, who the Bay Area has gotten so bad for, but it's not bad enough statewide to where we're going to leave the state. We'll just go up to Placer County, where they've embraced law enforcement, and they've embraced good pro-business practices. They haven't destroyed their local economy yet. We'll go up there, and we won't go all the way out of state. So that's what we've seen in our area.
Yeah, I know a guy who lives in Boise, and he said Boise was kind of like it was a place where guys like him would go out there, conservative religious families. But he said that there's a lot of blue state people. They're moving into Boise as if it's like Austin, Texas. And so that's going to happen into your town as well, right?
There is some of that. And I'm telling you this as a guy who moved a business up to Boise in 2016. And every new business I've started up in Boise, even though I'm still here in Placer County, California. Huh. Idaho Statesman is the paper, the main paper that serves the Boise area. They actually went and did a pretty thorough survey about a year and a half ago of people moving into Ada County, the Boise, the greater Boise area, that's Boise needed that area. And what they found is that the people moving in are actually fairly reflective of those that were already there. There's a reason why people are willing to give up the nice warm California climate in order to move to Boise, because they see a little bit more sanity. So the it was interesting that when the Idaho Statesman did that analysis, they found that an awful lot of what was coming in was people like me saying, we're done with California. Where's next?
Yeah. But you're not, you haven't really left California.
I have not. No, I'm still in California, and I, you know, I'm a Cal, I'm, my kids are fourth generation Californians.
And so you're going to stay.
I'm staying for now. You know, we'll see how bad it gets. But no, we moved up here to the Sacramento area in 1970. My dad was an appointee when Ronald Reagan was governor. My dad joined his cabinet when he was governor, and that's what got us up here. And then my dad went on to work with Reagan when Reagan was president. My dad actually, true story, my dad is actually the one who introduced Ronald Reagan to Justice Kennedy back in 1972-73. Mm-hmm. When my dad was drafting the very first attempt at a state spending limit in California, Proposition 1, my dad prevailed upon Governor Reagan to put it on the ballot. And Reagan had one condition. And they said, if this passes, we know we're going to get sued. So I want to make sure that it passes constitutional muster. So my dad went to McGeorge School of Law here in Sacramento, found a con law professor named Tony Kennedy, and brought Tony in to work with my dad and Reagan to draft Prop 1, the very first attempt at a state spending limit. That's how Anthony Kennedy, who, of course, went on to become a Supreme Court justice, met Ronald Reagan.
Amazing. And I think people under 50 don't even remember that California was once a red state. It wasn't that long ago, right?
No. So 1996, I ran for the state legislature. I'd done one term here on the Board of Supervisors. I was young. I was a punk. Didn't deserve to get elected, so I didn't. But ran for the state legislature in 1996. It was a Republican speaker.
Uh-huh.
Republicans controlled the assembly in 1996. So 96. it wasn't forever ago. And then we, you know, that was the era of Pete Wilson, Duke Majan. We had Jerry Brown in there, but then we sobered up and we brought back in, Duke Majan and Wilson and then Schwarzenegger. And he did more to damage the Republican brand in California, frankly, than anybody else. I mean, that was really, as far as I'm concerned, that was kind of the beginning of the end for Republicans in California, unfortunately, with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. I mean, he came in very strong because you kicked out who got the recall?
Gray Davis got recalled.
Right. Yeah. So Gray Davis was recalled. He came in, and didn't he kind of come in strong, but then in order to get reelected, he totally dealt with the Democrats. Is that what he did?
Here's the funny thing. He came in, we're going to blow up the boxes and we're going to slash the government spending and blah, 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 blah. And immediately, again, going back to our friends, the California Teachers Association, all the public employees unions began a fairly aggressive, meaning $100 million spent in public messaging against the governor about how the governor wanted to shut down your local schools and all this stuff. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it was he just thought that his charisma would carry the day. He and his campaign team didn't see the need to mount a counter campaign. Mm-hmm. And so by the time they finally realized, we're losing the messaging battle, they had so tainted him as the messenger that it was pretty much downhill from there. And so at that point, he became this get along, go along, aw shucks kind of guy. And, you know, the Terminator was out and Kindergarten Cop was in.
Yeah, I think these guys do that. It's somebody like John Kasich did it in Ohio. They want to be reelected and they just destroy everything that they built up. And then they end because they're thinking about their legacy, but it ruins their legacy.
That's right.
And everyone knows Schwarzenegger is a loser at this point. Nobody likes the guy.
You know, it's funny. My dad used to say people people run for office, you know, referencing at the federal level, people run against the cesspool that is Washington, D.C. But after they get been there for a while, it starts to feel more like a hot tub.
Yeah, exactly. What about the, because we do this on Fox News. I don't know how often we talk about San Francisco. I mean, there's so many stories about San Francisco, oh, yeah. About Portland, obviously Los Angeles. Is it past the point of no return? What is California going to do? Because we keep, you mentioned the word debt spiral. Mm-hmm. Everyone around Fox is saying, well, you know, we've lost hope for places like California. Have you lost hope? I mean, where's it going to go? Like, who's going to stay in California? Because I was just in Menlo Park. I spent a week out there at St. Patrick's Seminary. I was singing at the seminary. We were doing Gregorian chant and everything. So I wasn't running around town, but I went into the town of Menlo Park. It's very nice. It's like Placer County. Yeah. It's, you know, it's away from, it's not that far from San Francisco, but it's away from all the chaos, you know? And I would ask people, I say, you know, are you going to stay here? And they said, well, you know, I'm thinking about leave. You know, if it gets any worse, I'm out of here. You know, they're always on the edge. But is there any hope that it's ever going to come back? Is the question.
So it's not the people like me that I mean. Frankly, I've my money for the most part has already left. I haven't started a business here in 7-8 years. And I've started 5 different businesses in Idaho that have employed dozens of people and raised a whole bunch of money.
But are you like a software guy? Are you like a startup guy?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a couple of different software as a service company focused on the entertainment space, focused on athlete monetization, a couple of different companies. But as a matter of fact, on one of my most recent companies, we were talking about employees and where they were and all this. And I was talking to some businesses here in California. We were a group of us meeting here in the Sacramento area, talking about how tough it's become. And I said, you guys don't understand. In my most recent company, I said, I only have one California employee. It's me. And I'm about to fire myself. We spend more time and money in compliance for me, one of the owners in California, than we do on, we had employees in 3 other states other than California. Those 3 states combined, we spend less time, less money, less effort on compliance there than we did on me here. It's yes, from a business standpoint, you still need to be worried about it. Obviously, California being essentially 10% of the U.S. market, in the one state, there's always going to be a business appetite to have a physical presence here in California, because we are such, you know, 13% of the U.S. population approximately, because we are such a strong marketplace, Pacific Rim access, all the rest. Our job here in our little enclave of the Sacramento area foothills is to make sure that we appeal with a message that says, if you've made the business decision that you need to be in California, this is where you want to be. And here are the reasons why. And so to the extent that we can, making it easier for businesses rather than harder, hence my message during the COVID lockdown of, we're not shutting down. And if you are a business that is regulated by the state directly by way of some kind of licensure, so a cosmetology, serving alcohol, and they can hold that hammer over your head, be careful, do what you need to do, but be careful. But no, you will have nobody from the county health department coming in and looking at what you're doing. You do your business, how you're going to do your business, knowing that really the only outside risk is going to be, does a state inspector walk through my door? It'll be nobody from the county that's coming in after you.
And when you say you start your businesses, you've done them in Boise. Is that the one place that you go, or you've done
in Idaho? Yeah, in Greater Ada County, Meridian, that whole area up there. Yeah.
And if you do that, do you avoid all of the California stuff? I mean, essentially, do they still whack you?
Yeah, everything regulatorily. Now I still have to pay, you know, California's confiscatory income tax as a California resident. I still, but as far as all the regulatory hurdles that we have to clear as a business, what does our workers' comp cost us in Idaho as opposed to in California? What are all the rest of your insurance costs? What are your ongoing annual? Here's a great example. I have my own personal LLC that I create here in California, that I have some of my business stuff that goes through here in California. For the pleasure of having my own LLC here in California, I get to pay $800 a year just to have the LLC. In Idaho, I paid $100 to establish it and $30 a year to renew it. Mm-hmm. So every company that I create up there, doesn't matter the size, it costs $30 a year as opposed to $800 here. Vehicles that we have to register in Idaho cost us maybe 15 to 20% what it costs to register a vehicle in California.
Wow. Okay. So I think we'll close with Newsom. All right. What's going on with Newsom? We can't stop talking about him on Fox News. He seems to love Fox News. I think he thinks that's his ticket to national politics, going on Fox News and getting in arguments with Hannity or whatever. But he's definitely going. I mean, he's going national. All right. Does he want to go right now? Is he hoping that I don't know if you have any special insight into him, but you're in California. I mean, you know the guy better than me. Does he want to go for this election? Does he think somehow that Biden's going to go down and he's going to jump in?
Yes, he absolutely does want to go in this election. And the most telling sign is not only his willingness to engage on Fox News with Hannity, do this little debate with DeSantis.
Yeah.
He's one of those who is his entire life. He's gotten by on his smile and his charm and his good looks. And he thinks that's going to be enough to win the day. And who knows, maybe it is. But
What do you think nationally? I've always said around the, you know, because people love talking about Newsom at Fox News. And I say, I don't know. I think Newsom is not going to play nationally. I don't think, but I could be wrong.
No, I'm hopeful that there is enough of a public acknowledgement of what he has done in California to where people can say, you know, that should serve as a warning to us and others. It is not a model that we want to replicate anywhere else. Let California be California, but let's not Californicate the rest of the country.
Yeah. Well, all right, Kirk, this was a great conversation. You know, maybe we'll just try to make an annual thing out of it. I just think you're an interesting guy, and I'm glad I, you know, found you in the early days of COVID.
Well, thank you. And listen, anytime, you know, the White House calls and I get a chance to come on and talk to the president of the United States.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm just sorry I didn't get a question about corn pop or anything like that. That's all.
The other night I was doing one for what was it? He was claiming that he was more Jewish than the rabbis that he was speaking for.
Oh, yeah.
So, claimed. Yeah. And then he was talking about his friend Corn Popstein back.
That's right. That was last week when you were on Greg's show. I think that's
Did it on that day. Lose track of it.
It was last Tuesday you were on Greg's show. I want to say something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was when that was when we heard that one.
Yeah. I mean, they assigned me the Joe Biden's in the morning. Greg will send me his monologue and then he'll just write, "What do you think, Joe?" And then I know I have to stick one in right there. So I work on it. And then sometimes they call and say, "Hey, somebody dropped out. Can you do the panel?" So,
I enjoy having you on there and want to thank you for being, I mean, you combine a good sense of humor with a pretty solid grasp of, you know, we can joke about this stuff, but this stuff is serious.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, that's why professionally, for the thing that I get paid for, at least I can, you know, not take it seriously. It's kind of a goof. And I'm not even that mean to Biden, honestly.
No, you're not.
I mean, I'm a lot meaner to Biden when I'm talking real politics. So I actually like that Fox News has me in the silly guy category, because if I had to go in and talk about serious issues every day, I mean, I would lose it. I would lose it because I think that Kirk, I almost think it's over. Like, I almost think the United States is beyond the point of no return. That's how bad it is. So if I had to get on Fox News every day and talk about it seriously, I'd be screaming. I'd be worse than Mark Levin. I'd be screaming every night.
I don't disagree with you, but we gotta, you know, we just gotta keep the faith that there's a bigger plan out there that we're not privy to, and we just all have our roles to play. And so just keep playing your role. Keep doing
that's
your
right. Thing. I agree. Let's end it with some positive energy.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Kirk.
Mom, thank you. This is a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
See you later.
All right.